We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month, the focus is on industrial automation. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, video, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Low.
I'm senior editor Devendra Hardwar.
And this week, we're going to look back on the year in tech and talk about what were some of the highlights, especially the winners and losers of this year. If you recall some of the biggest fiascos or some things that really impressed you, those are some of the things we're going to go over this week because it's been a long, long year. Just remember, at the very start of this year, we had something at the Capitol. It sounds like a long, long time ago. I don't want to bring up some past trauma for some of us too much here, but
it feels like it went by pretty quickly, to be honest. But there was so much that happened. I can't remember everything.
Yeah. The year zoomed by, but it managed to squeeze in a lot. And we will be talking about all of that. Sadly, some of the winners we've had to name were not what we were happy with naming. We will get to that in a little bit. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe on your podcast catcher of choice. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes. And if you have the time, every Thursday morning on the Engadget YouTube channel, we actually broadcast the recording of the Engadget podcast live. So come join us over there. We have a nice little group of audience members that chat with us and ask us their questions, and you get to hear us answer them in real time. It's always fun. So we hope to see you there. So let's start with the winners of 2021 in tech. And this is a list that I think maybe may get a little controversial. And we'll get to the controversial bit maybe in a little bit. I will start with one of the less obvious winners, specifically Windows 11. We named Windows 11 a winner. Devendra, do you want to tell us like your thoughts? I know you reviewed Windows 11 this year. Why do you think Microsoft won with Windows 11 in 2021?
I mean, it's hard to say. I'm not saying it's a knockout OS or anything, but Windows 11, I actually scored it lower than Windows 10 in my review.
I saw.
But yeah, as far as like, you know, a step forward for Windows visually and aesthetically, I think it's kind of interesting. It is a step backwards in terms of usability and some things. Like I still have issues with the new taskbar, and I know a lot of people do. But it is interesting to see Microsoft just like push this thing out there. I also don't think I really think they didn't really plan on releasing a Windows 11 this year. And I feel like with the way Windows 10X went down and, you know, the pause on dual screen devices, which that OS variant was supposed to focus on, a lot of what we see in Windows 11 was supposed to be Windows 10X. And this just feels like, hey, they did this design work and it kind of makes sense. Now is a good time for Microsoft to push forward to a slightly newer, slightly, you know, more modern and maybe a more secure OS too. So, you know, it's been rolling out. There haven't been too many major issues. So I'll call that a win for Microsoft. But yeah, not everything they did was a win this year. So yeah, we'll get into some of that.
Oh, for sure. I would like to say that just because we're talking about Windows 11 first, by the way, on this episode, doesn't mean that Windows 11 is like the biggest winner of 2021. Yeah. We have other winners we'll get to that will make it clearer. We're just kind of organizing things a little differently for this episode. There will be a written article of this coming out soon. I also wanted to talk about these lists ahead of them being published, partly because, hey, we would always love to get your feedback, as one of our podcast.
Maybe we missed something.
Yeah, exactly. You're one of our trusted audience members. We love hearing what you think. Anyway, Windows 11 is one of them. And like you said, right, it does seem to be bringing about like the beginning of something interesting, at least even if not just for like laptops and traditional form factor devices. It at least seems to be setting the stage for more different styles of devices to come. What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't know. Like,
no?
There's not much of a change here for dual screen devices.
What about that multi-screen thing?
Multi-screen thing is fine. Like, it's better with multi-monitors, but multi-monitor users, you know, there is very specific type of pro user. So the things Microsoft needs to focus on is like, hey, making a better tablet experience for Windows, making a better experience for ARM devices, because mm-hmm. those are the kinds of computers people have been trying to push out there, mm-hmm. Thinner and lighter machines. So I feel like all this is kind of work towards getting us there. But yeah, I think Microsoft has a lot of work to do. And this just shows like Windows 10 launched in 2015, 2016. So it's probably about time for them to kind of refocus a little. This is a more secure OS, and they're doing certain things like requiring secure boot, requiring, you know, more hardware within a system to make Windows more secure. And I do wonder if they've been looking at a lot of the like ransomware attacks and a lot of the like, there's been a lot more cyber attacks going around, and a lot of that stuff hasn't been publicized. It's mainly focused on companies, but I do wonder if Microsoft is just thinking, hey, we need to get ahead of a lot of this stuff, and by requiring more security, that'll make computers, you know, safer in the long run. That's true. But yeah, I think the upgrade process for many people, it's one of those things. I don't think anybody's talking about Windows 11 anymore. The only people that are computer nerds, and maybe you'll buy a new computer and it'll be there and you'll be like, hey, that's different. This is like a prolonged thing. Most people have not seen Windows 11 yet.
Exactly.
But it's been relatively smooth so far, so I give them credit for that.
Good on Microsoft for that. So, I mean, I think we can save some of the details for the written article when that's ready. We'll move on to some of the other winners on this list. And then, by the way, these what we talk about today aren't the exhaustive complete list. We brought some highlights to the table, and I want to talk about one obvious winner this year: home fitness tech. I think that home fitness tech was kind of a winner last year, but this year really just
it totally was. We totally brought it up last year, I think, for the same reason. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think even more this year, you've seen companies like Peloton, I guess Bowflex probably, but also SoulCycle, Equinox, all make their own, you know, at-home devices, at-home services. And don't just think about the gadgets or machines that you can keep at home for your home gym. We're also thinking services like Fitness Plus, Apple Fitness Plus. We're thinking Peloton workout subscription service as well. Lots of different, you know, fitness studios, mm-hmm. I guess, gyms, yoga studios, et cetera, all just really stepping up their game to bring these at-home exercise or workout videos, just making them better, making them work on more platforms.
The VR exercise stuff, like Supernatural, has been super hot, right?
So successful.
I mean, Oculus bought Supernatural because of that. You know, it's really interesting space. How I know you've tried a bunch of these subscriptions, Sherlyn. Like, is there one you really like and that you're really impressed with?
I'm still pretty impressed with Apple's Fitness Plus, right? Because
it's good when it works. Yeah.
And mostly for the fact that it ties into the Apple TV box mm-hmm. so well and mm-hmm. the Apple Watch so well. Not to be like a sucker for the ecosystem thing, but it worked when it works seamlessly. Works nicely.
This entire year has been the slow dawning for Sherlyn that having a slightly more locked in ecosystem where one company is building all the stuff. Like, yeah, it can create a more cohesive experience. Yeah. Sherlyn is using an iPhone as her main right now. She is wearing an Apple
this
Watch.
Is not true.
Like, this is all true. I like Apple Fitness Plus. The one thing that I will say is that the synchronization sometimes isn't great. Sometimes I lose sync with my watch and the workout on my TV. And then it doesn't save where you are at. It kind of restarts. It just kind of freaks out. So there are certain things that don't work well. But when it's on fire, it is pretty hot.
Yeah, for me, because, again, small space, and I've never really had any issues with dropping connections like that, it's been good. And the only complaint I've really had was that, the workouts, for some of them that I'm pretty advanced in, they're not too difficult. They're not difficult enough. But for the rest of them, like core or HIIT, they're really good. Anyway, and like you rightly pointed out, VR fitness is also heating up. I mean, Supernatural is a good example because it's just one of the better ones out there. But there's plenty of VR boxing simulators or VR gym type things. And then companies like Tonal, Tempo, just kind of becoming more and more familiar names within the industry.
Sure.
So there's just a lot of developments.
It's intriguing. Once we get to the point with AR glasses, right? And I've tested some of that stuff. I talked about the Ray-Ban,
stories,
things with the cameras, the Ray-Ban stories. But once you get like an environment where you're not just trapped in VR and you can still see virtual things amongst the real world, like I think that's going to lead to some really cool games, but also really cool like VR experiences. Like you know, fighting a video game character or fighting a boss that looks like they're standing right there in the room with you. There can be some really cool stuff there for exercise and for everything. Yeah.
Yeah. That brings us right into, I think, the next section of winners. And we're bundling this together because these are the winners that we kind of like are mad at ourselves that we have to like kind of call these things winners. But
sure, they won.
They kind of won. Starting with, you pitched this one, Devendra, the metaverse. It's a winner.
I mean, it's more like the term the metaverse. It's been a very good year for the term the metaverse. Maybe the whole thing about having like a virtual internet that you can go into or something that, you know, follows you from device to device. That's really what the metaverse is trying to be. And the idea that Facebook pitches is that it's like a step beyond mobile internet. It is a world where you're always connected. No matter what device you're on, your kind of experiences move between devices. And maybe eventually, you could put on a VR headset. But this year, I think the big thing is just like the name Metaverse has been something everybody has been talking about. You know, Facebook changed its name to Meta. That's not something a company does lightly. A name change like that is very, you know, it's very rare for big companies. And it does signify where Facebook is headed, even if I don't know how well they're going to succeed. I don't know if any of this stuff is going to work out. But once Facebook started talking about that, then everybody started talking about their metaverse plans and how they're viewing it. And it's not just a buzzword, because I do think everybody is thinking about the next stage of connectivity and communication. Microsoft's metaverse involves Teams and Microsoft's Mesh and, you know, virtual meetings. I know Intel has sucked, and they've talked a little bit about it, and I think we're going to hear more soon. NVIDIA is talking about a metaverse for they're talking about like having the building blocks for building avatars for the metaverse and everything. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think the metaverse as an idea will actually be the thing a lot of these companies are pitching, but it is interesting to see a lot of them focus on the concept of metaverse right now.
Basically, we're going to hear a lot more about this next year, probably, right?
The next 10 years, like this is setting the stage for, this is like in the early 90s where people first started talking about the World Wide Web, and we didn't know what that would mean, you know? And in the mid 90s, the idea that you would be buying stuff online, even that seemed like a foreign concept. It didn't seem like something that was actually a thing. And then Amazon grew and grew and grew, and then everything had to be online. So, you know, I think we're amidst one of those shifts. I hope this is not a terrifying shift into like inevitable control by all these companies. I still love having a free and open internet, and I hope we can do that with the metaverse.
We shall see. Something else that made our winners list that we were reluctant about, that also I can't tell if it has legs for beyond this year or not, right? And everybody hold your breath and cringe with me when I say this. One of the winners in 2021, NFTs.
Oh, yeah.
I apologize for the pain you feel right now.
I think you pronounce it as umfts, Sherlyn, right?
Umfts.
Umfts.
Yeah. Umfts. Sorry. Good morning.
That's the way to do it.
NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, are... there's been so many memes about NFTs.
We did a whole episode about this, right?
We did a full
Go back and listen to our NFT episode. Exactly. Yeah, that was good.
It was a good explainer into it. We have a good explainer by Daniel Cooper on our site as well. If you want to get caught up on what an NFT is and kind of all the nitty-gritty of how it works, but not to go too far into it during this discussion, you know, just to kind of recap what has happened since then, everyone's getting into NFTs now.
Everything. The apes have grown. The apes have had an actual event in New York where a lot of people came, and I think the market value for overall NFTs now ranges in certainly millions, could be billions. I don't know if I believe that number. It's all insanity. It's all pure craziness right now. And I don't know what to think about it. I kind of hate everything. But I also see a lot of startup bros, a lot of investors, and people in the art world who are more into the selling of art, you know, the actual marketplace of art, are intrigued by this. This also reminds me why I hate the art world. Like I visited Art Basel like maybe 5 years ago in Miami, which is like the big hip modern art thing. And it was just like insufferable. I hated all of it. And now we've turned that whole like push for insufferable art and those were actually people creating things. And now we're having like computer generated images of the goddamn apes are now worth millions. I can't even with any of this stuff.
Not to say that there isn't some inherent value in a secure way to authenticate art and to ensure that the owner sure. has the rights to their art, that sort of thing. There is value in that. I just expected the NFT craze, the absolute ridiculous, you know, minting of anything as an NFT to go away mm-hmm. by now. And it hasn't. And I think that sort of staying power is where it gives me pause. And I have to be like, maybe there might be here to stay in a way that blockchain has stayed, mm-hmm. you know, in spite of me thinking they might have been a craze when I first started hearing about them. Right. So
it's the amount of money. It's the money involved right now that makes it like, okay, this is serious. I hate it. I will not own an NFT probably, but clearly something is happening. So we're just paying attention. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're you know, you've been covering your ears this entire time, not wanting to hear about NFTs, we're going to move on to the next thing for now. But if you have any other thoughts about NFTs, again, feel free to send it our way, podcast@engadget.com. The last, I hope, of our cringeworthy winners of 2021. And this one's not that cringeworthy. It's all just kind of like funny how much this was mm-hmm. a winner this year. Guys, remember GameStop?
Yeah, I do. Which was actually tied to a lot of the early wave of NFT stuff too. Like there was a lot of like speculative investors trying to pump up money and value of things. The whole GameStop story, we also did an episode about this, so be sure to go check that out. It's all kind of a mess. And yeah, it didn't actually mean anything for GameStop ultimately. Yeah.
I mean, their share price, the last I checked, was still like $170-something, which is significantly sure. more mm-hmm. than, you know, before all of that shorting of GameStop stock. That's a tongue twister this early in the morning for me. You know, but higher than what it was before all of this happened. I see that as kind of a win for them in part because, you know, the fact that people still value them at that price, regardless of the meminess and the, you know, fleetingness of all that happened, shows that like, I mean, it depends on how much of that would translate to real money for them. But I know that they also had plans to like with all the new game titles coming in and all that stuff, like, they could have good returns for their investors and stuff like that. They were promising decent performance this year. But I feel like had they not gotten all of that attention and all of that, like, you know, jumping up of their share price, they may not have been able to sustain or gain the confidence that they might have now. And I honestly still don't know if they have real like investor confidence or if people are just, yeah.
It wasn't a real push in value for their stock. So it's like, you're not doing better because your business is better. You know, it's all just kind of fake. And a lot of this stuff has just made me really disillusioned with the state of how financial markets and everything works. The same thing happened to AMC too, which was a company, you know, theater company that was in bitter, like almost bankrupt. They got some extra funding in. Their stocks also got pumped up by these crazy schemes. And now they're doing well. They're doing well enough to have like a $20 million ad starring Nicole Kidman walking around empty theaters, you know? So I don't even know what's happening, but hopefully we've learned something from this. You know, that's my main thing.
I think the thing we've learned from this is that, you know, power of mm-hmm. the people, right? Like when people band together to do whatever they want or what they you know want, they can do a lot. And speaking of, thanks to our producer, I think we've got some more recent stats on GameStop stock. So they're $163 as of right now of this recording. Although on the first Monday of this year, which is before all of this started, I guess, their stock price was $17. Also, Ben, our producer, is pointing out that the GameStop slogan is power to the players, which is kind of an appropriate story right now, right? Like, okay.
Sure.
Nice.
Fine. I hate GameStop as a company, so sure. Okay. Whatever you say.
Okay, moving on to a couple of other winners on our list. These are a little less reluctant, but they're also winners mm-hmm. with caveats.
Yeah, things you like. Yeah,
things that we just liked on the team, despite a few quirks here and there. So one of the things I'm shouting out is something that I also saw mentioned in our live stream chat, which is the Google Pixel 6 Pro. Now,
yay!
Yeah, good on you, Google, for making a phone that I feel like is the is a really great canvas for its strengths. So great camera, great software. Tensor as a chip is performing well this far into the game for me. I'm like a few months into using the Pixel 6 Pro, not as my main, but I carry it around a lot. I need to say that, like, me and a lot of people who were former Pixel fans, or at least have been Pixel fans before this, do not like its size. We still have an issue with that. The fingerprint sensor thing is a little bit solved now. I feel like people just kind of needed to get used to it, and Google needed to address some of the issues, which it's, did over and over the air update, I believe. But here's how I know the Pixel 6 Pro is a winner, right? When I go to a fun event, like a dinner, a birthday dinner, or like a hangout with friends or whatever, or going a nice walk, right? I make sure to grab it with me. Why? Because I know I want to take great pictures. I know I want to, I wish I used it as my main more, because the voice typing truly is actually a nicer experience.
You wish you used it as your main? It's almost like something is stopping you and compelling you to go to the other side. Yeah.
No. We could talk about the iPhone in a little bit, because this is on our list too. But anyway, but the Pixel 6 Pro, honestly, for Google, the other selling point of this, the other really good thing that Google managed to do, is to keep it priced where it is, right? It's like $200 to $300 cheaper. Yeah.
Yeah.
For what it's been able to do, it's really a great return to form, I think, for Google after like 2 years of kind of disappointing Pixel releases. Outside of the A series, this truly is, I think, a very promising sign for Google that its Pixel phones can be really great. They've heard a lot of the feedback we've given now about the size. I'm sure next year we'll see a smaller one that's still as good as the big one. So Pixel 6 Pro, hopefully this is great for Pixel fans and probably very good news
Android
for Google
in general. I think this is the first Android phone in a long time where I'm like, I would like to play with this. I would like to spend some time with this. I wish it were easier just to like go between different platforms, but it's not,
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that tough to just like swap your SIM out and stuff, but I wish I could just like pick up a device and being like, hey, move my cellular over here for this day while I go walk around with this thing. Maybe someday we'll get there. I don't know.
I know. I hope so too. Right now, there's some apps, WhatsApp, that make it really hard for me to like switch between mains very easily. I wish I could do that more.
It used to be that WhatsApp had to connect to your PC, right, to use the desktop app. And now they've done stuff so that you don't even need to do that anymore. So they're working on like making their network a little more, it's always been secure, but a little less dependent on a single device.
Yeah, so it's still SIM locked is part of the issue. Yeah. And when it's SIM locked, the I don't know, Google has announced that it's been working on a way to make transferring between iOS and Android devices, have your WhatsApp history follow between the two a little easier. Right now, though, it's still not there. And that's why, like, the second I switch to iPhone with my WhatsApp, it's like, I guess I'm on iPhone now. Which, to be honest, is a good way to force me to use iPhone, because otherwise I would just use Pixel all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, so you can finally text me in iMessage and not be a green bubble.
Speaking of iMessage, Apple had to kind of be a winner on our list this year. Uh-huh. If for a few other reasons than, and this is me making a very personal statement, I don't think that eventually our, ultimate argument is going to be just this, but Apple TV Plus won hard this year. Why? Ted Lasso. On the strength of Ted Lasso alone, I feel like TV Plus.
I still feel like that was mostly a last year win, but it carries over to this year.
This year there was a good season two. Yeah. And then, there's other shows on there that are pretty good too. Mythic Quest, I think For All Mankind, a lot of people were talking about.
Mythic Quest, I guess they did have a new season.
I
was trying to think, like, did they make something new?
It was mid-pandemic. But that was like last year. Look, it's hard to distinguish between the 2 years. And you are right. You could all consider that a last year win, just because, like, the first season may not necessarily have been launched this year.
It's all the same stuff too. I would say this year, the big pick is For All Mankind, which transformed into being like an incredible TV show. Because when Apple TV Plus launched, it was fine.
Not so great,
it was a fine little alternate history thing. But now it's like, oh, you're going places. Yeah.
Yeah. And more and more good original content coming out on Apple TV Plus since then. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of just improvement in the quality of their shows. Good on them. But we're not here just to talk about TV Plus. I think Apple has also continued to show. I think this is a story for Apple of continuing the, and I hate to say this because it sounds like I'm marketing for them, but just continuing some excellent work, right? I almost say continued excellence, and I'm just like, no, this is too marketing-y.
I know we chose a lot of their products, but I feel like the things that really kick butt this year are the M1 chips,
yes,
right? It's the M1 Pro and the M1 Max and kind of how they led to a phenomenal redesign of the MacBook Pro. And go check out my reviews of those things. They're good.
Yeah.
Really good. Really fast.
Yeah. Exactly. So anyhow, that is one of the winners on our list. We'll get into more of the details. But like Devendra pointed out, M1 chips are some of the reason that Apple continued to wow us this year. And the Apple Watch is still the best smartwatch around in spite of Wear OS 3. Yeah. That big screen is lovely.
You know how I can tell the M1 chips are doing really well is like I'm looking around at like AMD and Intel and their announcements and the way they're hustling to do things. And I could just see everybody sweating.
Yeah.
And when one company makes everybody else sweat, that's how you know, okay, they're onto something. So Intel, you know, they launched their 12th generation chips, but they're not kind of on our list this year because they're fine. We haven't seen many computers with them yet. We don't know how well they're really compared to a lot of the stuff Apple's working on. So hey, yeah, competition is good. It's good for Apple to make everybody sweat this time.
So a quick shout to one of the remaining other winners on our list. And again, this is not an exhaustive, complete list, but actually it's pretty complete, but this is not a fully complete list. But anyway, one of the other items on our winners list is Disney Plus. Also got just kind of a huge jump this year. You know, a lot more subscribers added, a lot of good shows, a lot of titles, despite some controversy, you know, with paying their actors and stuff like that. Or I don't know if that's them or the studios. I'm not as wired into the entertainment
that
space.
It's a whole thing. But
you know, Disney Plus, you know, for a fairly late entrance to the streaming service game, did pretty well with a bunch of new, you know, MCU shows this year and new animation shows. And then we've got Disney Day showing us how much other content is coming up to look forward to if you're a fan of their content. So just look out for that listing on our winners list as well.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, are you watching anything on Disney Plus, Trillin?
Oh yeah, I've actually found myself just watching more stuff because I've bought Disney Plus now because I had to watch all the MCU shows. So I've enjoyed all.
There was a gun to your head. Like, make it worthwhile. You had no choice. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Luca, Luca, I watched half of. I just couldn't finish it because not really my thing. But I managed to watch. Yeah, I saw Maleficent, all of it, even though it was like, okay.
Okay.
I rewatched a lot of my, you know, favorite classics and that sort of thing. So it's like our producer pointed out, it's not surprising because they've got good content. It's not surprising that they did well with all the Marvels.
It's the library. It's the power of their library and the fact that they've done some like quick releases.
Yes, that's part of it.
To streaming. Like there were some day and date, but mostly it was the fact that, you know, I don't know. I think they kind of led the way in terms of like bringing theatrical releases home. Not as much as HBO and Warner Brothers, because what they like were just bringing all their big releases down day and date as theater.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting year
for Disney Plus. And yeah, and it happened really quickly for Disney Plus. So lots to see there. Anyway, that's our winners list for this episode of the podcast. Of course, we, like I said, have more in our full coverage coming on Engadget.com soon. If you have any more ideas for what should be a winner this year, feel free to send it our way at podcast@engadget.com. Now let's move on to arguably the more fun part of this conversation, the losers of 2021, or the people we love to hate. There has been a kind of a shit year, and there's been a lot of shit going on, starting with the chip supply shortage that has been so severe has become another meme. For example, I'm sorry I was late, there was a global chip supply shortage. And Devendra.
Yeah, we have to talk about our relationship because there's a global chip supply shortage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have to talk. Yes. But go ahead, Dev. Tell me all about this. What's happening and what's being impacted, which just sounds like everything.
People have been talking about this for a while. So the story is that because of the increased demand on chips for cars and PCs and everything, that has been dwindling the supply from chip suppliers. And chip suppliers haven't been able to build as much as they normally do because they're dealing with scalebacks in the workforce and other issues like just producing stuff during the pandemic. So it's like a two-pronged problem that is apparently going to be with us for a while. I've talked to analysts who are like, initially in April, they were thinking maybe this will last until, you know, 2022. Maybe we'll get out of it by then. Now they're thinking like 2023 because we're at the end of 2021. Not much has really changed. The supply hasn't really gotten better. The things that could fix this would be like companies creating and building new fabrication plants, new fabs. That is a several-year process. So Intel announced it's going to be doing that. They're spending like $20 billion on some fabs in America. But it's going to be years before those are up and running and producing any hardware. So basically, we're going to be living with this for a while. Car prices are kind of one of the big things affected. I don't know if you've been trying to shop for a car. The used car market has blown up. Like, everything is more expensive. Buying a new car is really tough. There's never enough stock. I think a lot of people are going to have to get used to using their older hardware for a little longer. The frivolous sort of like upgrade every year for things. Maybe we should just avoid that for a little. And maybe we can learn a lesson about extending the lives of our electronics a little because of this. But yeah, it's not fun, and it's going to be with us for a while.
Jonathan Anderson in our live stream chat points out, Frito-Lay must be really ticked off because of this chip supply shortage. I want to say, Jonathan Anderson, get out. You're
get out.
Banned.
Get
very
out.
Bad joke. I'm kidding.
I mean, you can ban people from the chat very easily.
that's a good one, but get out. Anyhow, yes, the global chip supply shortage makes losers of all of us this year, but, you know, and as far as losers of this list go, let's be honest, first of all, we are all the losers this year. Let's put that up front. But when we get to the specifics, it's because of things like the global chip supply shortage. And then there's also screw 5G, because 5G, screw you. I continue to get my hopes up and I continue to be let down every year, and I'm still mad at 5G.
As somebody who's reported on 5G, it's here, question mark. It's not great.
Here's what's happening. Okay, let me just tell you why 5G is a loser, my boy. I am so angry, I'm shivering. The fact that, and I don't really remember if this happened with LTE, it might have, but the fact that when I go into a briefing and someone's like, oh, this device is 5G enabled, and I had to be like, do you mean sub-6 or millimeter wave or mid-band? Is everything supported? Like, the fact that I have to be specific and ask about these things each time, and the fact that the manufacturers or the representatives can't give me a straight answer all the time, they don't know. They just straight don't know. It's a problem. It's annoying.
It's a problem in deployment. It's a problem in, like, what technologies devices support. LTE, like, Shrillin was a baby in college when LTE was rolling out, okay? So this is pre her reporting days. But, yeah, when LTE was rolling out, it was, hey, look, this thing is fast. It was pretty simple. This real fast.
Yeah, and it was.
The phones were like, hey, this big phone goes real fast. It was very simple to get. There were some things of like AT&T trying to fake 4G. Again, they had like 4G plus, which was just like, what was it, HSPA plus or something. It was like 3.5G technology to fake 4G. That was the like biggest controversy we had. Beyond that, LTE was a battery drain. It took a while for companies to really get into it. But, you know, we got there. And it was pretty simple. Like, everybody wanted LTE. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're there. And I don't know how long the deployment fully really took for LTE, but we were promised 5G rollouts in 2020. Sure. And I will grant that they did sort of beat that target a little bit with the, you know, early releases in 2019 and stuff like that. And
it doesn't count. Bringing like one antenna to a city doesn't count.
Yeah. And then let's also ignore AT&T's whole like 5GE thing or 4G. I forget what the hell. Whatever. Screw you, AT&T. I'm sorry. Verizon owns us, and they didn't pay me to say that. Anyway.
I'm on Verizon, and they don't own us anymore, but yeah.
10% of us.
Investor.
Yeah.
I'm on Verizon. I was just walking around New York. I'm back in New York for the week, and I saw a new 5G label. It was like 5GU.
I
was like, what?
What is that?
So here, that's part of the whole thing. So, okay. So, again, I need to calm down before I say this. So, I don't know if you saw UW or if you saw like
I saw UW. Okay. Is that so ultra wideband?
Yes, ultra wideband on Verizon. That's what they are calling. I'm on T-Mobile because I was like, stick it to the parent company and didn't ever switch. And they have this thing called UC. And I'm like, what on earth? What the hell? I report on 5G. I don't even know what the heck UC means in that context. Why are there so many different...
I also saw UW. I was walking down the street around Madison Square Park. Around Madison Square Park. And I saw UW. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Speed test. What is happening here? By the time the speed test launched, it just said 5G.
Over, gone, yeah.
So it's also like you never know when you're in the good 5G, when you're in the bad, when you're in normal 5G. And it's like,
yeah,
we're paying more for this. I'm paying slightly more to get 5G.
There's no reason, nothing's really happening. And then sometimes I'm just out and about and it's on 5G and I just can't open a website. It just won't load. I don't know why. Anyway.
Yeah.
As you can tell,
5G bad.
Yeah. Very many reasons 5G is very disappointing, continues to be is a loser this year because it continues to be such a mess. Like I was willing to give it a pass last year, but we're 2 years on from when we were promised 5G. And no, this is not here. So also would like to shout out our live stream chat member, Wilso, who says that they currently work in telecommunications. And as a person that works in telecommunications, they say, let me say, screw 5G.
I've been reporting on 5G since 2012. I've seen demos at Mobile World Congress. And it was like, those were cool demos. Where is it? Show me the proof of this technology being really good. And it is not there. We also saw the news about several carriers have to lower the performance of their networks because it's causing interference with like aviation equipment too. So it's like... Yeah, we should have thought about this before we started deploying it. We just need to have a whole episode of just like
of going 5G off rage. About 5G.
Yeah, 5G rage. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to things that might make me less mad or actually bring my blood pressure up even more. This is one of the obvious losers of the year, Activision Blizzard. Devendra, do you want to tell people why?
I mean, it's everything. We've talked about this on the show, too, but it is it's the lawsuit from California on Activision Blizzard about the workplace harassment and the way they didn't support the women who worked there. Like, it was a toxic environment. Then there's the recent reporting, too, about the CEO, who is well aware of everything that was happening and in many cases tried to hide it from the board and from the public. And it is a lot of those things. It just shows us, like, man, that place is kind of a cesspool. People have been talking about it as a cesspool and nothing has happened because the HR department there was more interested in just like ignoring employee complaints, covering up for the execs and just like making it a not great place to work. It sucks. It sucks for Activision Blizzard. I hope they face some consequences because it's really endemic of the state of the gaming industry and just how hostile gaming
continues to
for
be
women especially and continues to be and it's not just games too, it's like it's the entire workforce. Like there was a story going around on Twitter about like things are legally required, like lactation rooms so women can pump their milk, mothers can pump their milk. They had issues with the sanitation in those rooms and access to those rooms, and people were stealing breast milk that they had like labeled and set aside, and just like generally gross, terrible things because most of the people who work there are just dudes, like dudes who don't care about anything, you know? So yeah, it sucks. Consequences. I'd love to see them.
That, and I think one of our staff members just kind of called out, you know, lots of AAA game companies as being a, you know, general bad. Yep.
All bad.
This
all
year.
Bad.
So there's a lot to dig into there, but we have Just Con that's going to write up our little entry for that on our losers of the year list. So stay tuned for that. She will, you know, give you a nice tidy summary about what happened. Another big loser of the year, which one of our live stream viewers shouted out earlier before we started this conversation, is yes, Facebook, aka Meta, definitely lost big this year.
Lost so big they had to change their name. Like, that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, the continued mess that is Facebook, right? Since for years now, actually. But this year in particular, the whole, like, papers that got exposed that showed how little they cared about the detrimental effect they were having on their users really just brought their shitty behaviors to the forefront of the conversation.
It's and not great. Mm-hmm.
Triggered a lot of hearings and a lot of important conversations that had to be had. And then the way they just reacted to all of it was, again, not great. And unsurprisingly not great. The fact that they decided to discredit people, reporters who got their hands on the papers and say that this was all, like, a PR thing. Like, huh? Don't you have a PR team? Like, there's just a lot that went on with Facebook.
Their PR response was to ignore it and, yeah, shame people as liars who were trying to report on it. So, we've talked about some of this about the Facebook papers on the podcast, but you should go back and try to, like, look up some of these stories, because there's so much news, it's easy to, like, miss a lot of the stuff that's happening. But what Facebook has been doing as they've been building and growing is, like, it's inexcusable in many cases. And it's no wonder Zuckerberg is just like, I'm escaping to the metaverse because I don't want to fix this.
That's what a lot of people are saying, right? That the rebrand to Meta feels like it might be sort of a attempt at distraction. And I don't know if necessarily it was, but if it's not a successful attempt, if it was an attempt at distraction, because people are still going to...
It's weird. It's weird because they talk about product announcements at the same time as they avoid talking about, like, how they're going to fix these issues. And I don't know if, like, a lot of this, honestly, are issues that every big social network is facing. Twitter has faced it. Google faces it on YouTube and whatnot. Of just, like, you built this thing that's so big and so wildly successful, except you have to maintain that thing. You have to keep people safe. You have to moderate content. And that is – it's a really hard thing to do. And the willingness to do it doesn't really seem to be there with Facebook.
Yeah.
And, they'd rather actively hide issues and not really deal with them rather than try to be realistic about things. So – I know. Government oversight sounds nice. Yeah.
The other thing too, I mean, there's a lot to this, like Devendra said, and our previous coverage might help you get a bit more up to speed on it. But part of it is, like, Facebook just is so huge that it's just very hard to escape any of its products. And therefore, it has greater responsibility to really maintain the safety of its platforms. But it just doesn't seem, like Devendra said, inclined to do so. And then, no, but it's one little show of kind of trying to say, yeah, we're gonna make sure we're responsible by instituting this oversight board. I don't even know how useful that actually was this year.
Hasn't been useful. Like, their first major decision, I feel like they pushed that right back to Facebook,
right?
And to Zuckerberg, to, like, yeah. Yeah. A company kind of oversee themselves. There's a reason why every major industry, you know, requires government regulation. Like, that's why the FCC exists. That's why the FDA exists. Like, we need to start treating and thinking about social media companies as, like, these public goods or these things that we need a government that's smart enough to kind of deal with what's happening. And I think the hearings with the Instagram CEO doesn't quite give me faith that we'll get there. But, you know, we need to keep trying because these companies got so big so fast and they're way too powerful and can't control themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of Facebook or Meta, another loser this year, and this is something you pointed out to me, Devendra, was Oculus. Just as a brand, they're going away. Sadly for them, I guess. Are you sad about this, Dev?
Oculus is the brand. It's kind of the loser because what happened is that after the Meta rename happened, we're all like, okay, cool. I get it. I get why Facebook is doing this. And then in, like, a Facebook post, not even like an official blog post or something, Andrew Bosworth, the CTO and, like, the head of the VR stuff, was just like, we're retiring the Oculus name and the branding. The Oculus Quest is going to be called the Meta Quest. And it's just, like, a lot of this stuff, which is kind of sad to see because Oculus, despite the crappiness of its, like, original founder, Palmer Luckey, is kind of a jerk. As a brand, it did symbolize a lot for the world of VR and the VR community.
Pioneer,
and
yeah.
I was sad when Facebook bought Oculus because I thought, like, oh man, this is kind of the end of this, like, cool technology they've been working on. And to its credit, Facebook has invested a lot in VR, but not so much in community, not so much in, like, building the separate thing. And now everything Oculus is going to be Meta. I suppose that was inevitable. Also because I think they realize Facebook is so toxic as a name and as a concept. People were annoyed when, like, they were saying, like, oh, you got to log in with your Facebook account to use your Oculus Quest. Now you're going to have to log in with your Meta account. And some people were like, oh, thank God. I'm like, guys, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. We're not dumb.
They're playing the card game that they play on the streets where they move things around in the cup on you. Don't be fooled. A shame for Oculus. And honestly, it was probably Oculus was dying because of what Palmer Luckey kind of ended up doing. And hey, now he's trying to stop illegal immigrants from crossing the border.
Hey, speaking of border walls and like social platforms, social media networks that just never ended up coming to pass. Have you heard of Truth Social? Has anyone here heard of Truth Social or remembers what Truth Social is?
I remember what Truth Social is, but tell me.
Truth Social is the name of this, a platform that former President Donald J. Trump was trying to set up. It up until today, I believe, it's still not happening.
The latest story is he's raising more money on like another thing.
We're seeing that it got pushed back to maybe launch early next year. Sure. I think he announced his plans at some point this year after he got kicked off.
The truth has been delayed, everybody.
Yeah. It's part of his, his team's effort to, quote, fight back against, quote, the big tech companies of Silicon Valley who have used their unilateral power to silence opposing voices in America. Okay, look, there is something about the big tech companies of Silicon Valley needing some regulation and needing a little bit of pushback sometimes. But I don't know that.
They've been bending over backwards to deal with, to welcome conservative voices. So no, thank you.
Yeah. If you've ever seen the Truth Social website, which is up, the website is up, and if you want to, you can join the waiting list. But if you want the
truth from a serial liar, please go.
If
for
you
it.
Want to Enjoy. Look at the website's color scheme and their logo and the fave icon on the website, the logo looks very familiar. Let's just say Facebook should be glad they got rid of the Facebook brand, I guess, because it's very similar.
It's very similar. Speaking of like another toxic social network, how about that?
According to some reports, or at least the latest that we have on this, Truth Social will have a beta launch supposedly in November for invited guests. I don't know anyone that's been invited, so sure. I don't know if this is happening actively right now, but they're expecting to roll it out nationwide first quarter of next year. Good luck. We'll keep an eye. This has been going on for a while and I haven't seen it go anywhere and I don't know what's going to happen. Nothing. I don't have
so actually the toxic social network I was kind of pointing you to was actually Clubhouse.
Indeed. Clubhouse is a suggestion from our producer, Ben. This is I'm not sure yet if it'll get added to it. Maybe it will. I'm still open to.
As a podcast loser, I totally agree.
For sure.
Clubhouse for should sure. be there.
Poor Club. I don't know if I feel pity for Clubhouse.
No,
a little
not
bit.
Poor Clubhouse. No.
Yeah, but you fair awful start. Yeah.
They raised a ton of money for a very simple concept of like, hey, guys, let's take a conference call and make it a live stream. Let's call it live voice chat. And they really blew up when in the early pandemic, right? Because people were looking for ways to connect. You couldn't just like go hang out with people. A lot of VCs, especially like Andreessen Horowitz, were like big on pushing this up and thought like this is the next major social platform. Turns out not really. And I think a lot of that early buzz was just from it being exclusive.
Yes,
exactly. It did the Silicon Valley thing of being like, oh, this is a special club. Like you can't come in here. Are you special? Can you come into my clubhouse? Like it was such that like schoolyard garbage. Whereas the actual tech and the tech behind it is like, okay, cool. Video voice chat that people can jump into and listen to on a broadcast scale. And Twitter looked at that and was like, yeah, we can do that.
Discord
and
did it.
Twitter Spaces. Discord did it. I mean, that's essentially like what Discord was doing from the beginning, except for not broadcasting. Twitter Spaces is like, I think, a more successful version of what Clubhouse has been doing because I see the conversations aren't always great. You give people a platform, you're going to get a lot of garbage. But I see a lot of Twitter Spaces from prominent people and people talking on that platform. Yeah. And that is... that's a clear sign. And occasionally I step into Clubhouse and I see what's happening. And I was like, oh, anti-Semitism. Great. Great. On your main page, Clubhouse. That's what's on the chat topics for tonight. Clubhouse has not really weathered the storm really well. And if you produce something that other people can copy very easily, you better have a backup plan. Like, that's the main takeaway here. And I don't think they really did.
The content just wasn't good enough. They didn't have any prominent creators that, like, really drew people to a service like that, right?
The they way, had
like,
celebrities came on. And I'm like, hey, I'll check it out.
Yeah. But the other thing is, if you're going to make people install a separate app for something that now Twitter offers, you really have to have, like, something that draws them in. For, yeah. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the last thing on our list of losers this year. Not complete. We have some other things in there that I don't feel like I want to talk about, or I don't feel as equipped to talk about on this episode. Specifically, like, big tech companies and their labor practices is one of the losers on our list. So if you have more ideas for what should be on our losers of the year list too, yeah, send it our way, podcast@engadget.com. So in some actual news this week, something happened with Twitter's privacy changes, Dev?
Actually, last week.
Actually, yeah,
last week. And mm-hmm. the reason I wanted to bring this up is because we talked about Twitter last week, and I just didn't, like, make time to talk about this one thing. But amid, you know, the major changes happening with Twitter, like losing Jack Dorsey and reconstituting where the company was, they also announced a new set of privacy changes that would really – the idea was to limit how people share personal information for other people or from other people. So that includes, like, details, addresses, stuff like that, and photos, personal photos. And it seemed like a fine concept at the start, but I think a lot of people were immediately like, this is going to be abused, guys. And as soon as people started saying that, a lot of, like, right-wing activists started – using that that limitation on people from the left, basically, and progressive activists who were, like, just pointing out, like, hey, this person is part of a Nazi protest. Like, here is what's happening. And yeah, it did not work out so well. And a lot of accounts ended up being I think it was suspended. Like, they were basically facing consequences for that. And then Twitter addressed it, and Twitter was like, yeah, they're aware of how this particular thing is being abused, mm-hmm. and they're going to do something about it. I just wish, I wish Twitter had thought about this in advance, because, like, any security person would have told them, like, hey, guys, be really careful with this, because it's very, very easy for somebody to, like, basically, you know, be a troll and abuse, like, the way this is meant to be used. Yeah. I don't know if you have deeper thoughts on this, Sherlyn.
Twitter, mm-hmm. think about something in advance? Like, having maybe closed captions for their voice tweets? You think?
Yeah.
Huh. Sounds like a novel idea.
Sounds like a novel idea. But yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on this. And hopefully Twitter is, like, trying to right the ship and do better things post-Dorsey. But we don't really know yet. You know, this is the first major change they announced. And it kind of backfired immediately. Yeah,
I will say also, I believe this happened on a Friday because it was on my news shift. The new CEO, Parag Agrawal, I believe, also announced, like, a major reorganization on Friday. The leads of engineering and design left the team, and they're moving to a new, like, general manager model. And Twitter's been pretty open about this sort of restructuring of the company, and they believe it will help them move faster and, you know, move forward in a way that should, I don't know, please investors or something like that, or make
sure.
People feel happier.
Please support.
We'll have to see. It's really a wait and see situation mm-hmm. right now with Twitter. So moving on to what we're working on, Devendra, I think I know what you're working on. What's up?
What am I working on? I am working on end of year stories. I have some, like, you know, some car related things I should write up before the end of the year too. So it's a bunch of different things, but I really just need to, I have a big story about, like, the global chip shortage I'm trying to finish up, and hopefully we will be up next week. Yeah.
Yeah, same here. I'm trying to get all my work wrapped before I leave to go home for the first time ever and since the pandemic. And y'all won't see me next week onwards. So, hey, you know, happy holidays, everyone, in advance. But yeah, in the meantime, before that, I have to rush through the year-end stories. We just talked about the best and worst lists, as well as an accessibility roundup that I'm working on. And lots of CES prep, right?
Yeah,
as always, it's this time of year. It's pretty intense.
It's still happening. We can't escape it.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and are you going straight from home to CES, Sherlyn?
No,
is that what's happening?
I'm going to try to stop in New York to catch a breather, get some tests done, you know, do some PCR tests while I'm back here, and just make sure that everything's good before moving on to Vegas. which is not going to be great, but I'm gonna make it work, you know? Speaking of testing and international travel and all of that, really brings me right on to our picks of the week. I know this is a very weird segue, but it will make sense. Trust me. So I haven't been able to do anything fun because I suck at having fun on my own, I guess. But also because I got my booster shot on Monday, uh-huh. and I was out mm-hmm. for the count on the day and a half after with side effects. I got the Moderna vaccine booster shot. So that had pretty more serious side effects, I think, than the Pfizer one, a lot of people said. But the reason I talk about this is because my recommendation for everyone is actually if your state where you got immunized has an app that allows for digital proof of vaccination or shows you your immunization records, why not get that? Like, so for me,
I would love one of those. Yeah. I'd love one of those.
I feel bad for you. But, you know, for me in New Jersey and for those of you in New York, for me in New Jersey, it's called Docket. The reason I say this is because when you're going on international travel, like I am about to soon, there's no real like vaccine passport system, but different countries accept different formats of vaccination. And some of my family members who are also flying back for this family, important family event, a wedding that we all have to attend, some of them got it in states that don't have support for this, called the Smart Health Card Network, which is, you know, more internationally recognized than the CDC paper card. That's just not recognized. You can't just wave it at an airport and expect to be.
That's what I've been doing here in New York. Is like I've gone to theaters and like some small restaurants, and it's like got to show a card, and this is the only thing.
Or a picture of a card,
a piece of cardboard. Yeah,
and we know how easy those are to mock up. So they're not really accepted globally. Here in the U.S., you're fine, but if you're looking to travel internationally anytime soon, apps like Docket and the Excelsior, the Excelsior Pass itself isn't recognized, but if it does generate a QR code that gets you an SHC format card, it'll be recognized by the Smart Health Card system that for my specific purposes, that's accepted. So anyway, look into that, and hopefully more and more states get on this, which will help facilitate.
It's almost like we should have a national way of doing this.
Exactly, a centralized way. But I was very glad that for me, New Jersey, I got my booster shot, and the next day it was in the system. I was like, I asked the person administering my shot, I was like, how long will it take to show up? They're like, 2 weeks. I was like, what? That's a long time. Nah, next day I got it in the app.
That's cool.
Very handy. I don't need to carry a card around with me, and it's verifiable with a QR code that's generated each time you open the app. So, you know, I'm grateful we live in a technologically modern world. Devendra, please tell me what TV shows I should watch.
What TV shows? I mean, there's a lot of TV, and I'm working on the list of things you should be watching over the holidays, so look out for that. They'll be going up soon. But the movie I just wanted to shout out this week is a movie called Drive My Car. Directed by Ryosuke Hamaguchi. The real reason I was into this is because it's an adaptation of a Haruki Murakami story. He's one of my favorite authors, so I'm just really interested in seeing everything that gets kind of based off of his stories. This is a movie about a guy, an actor and director who is living a happily married life, and then his wife dies all of a sudden. And it's really a grieving process movie about him traveling to another city, I believe to Hiroshima from Tokyo, and just putting on a play there, but also him dealing with losing his wife and kind of what it means. It's a movie about, life. It's a movie about infidelity and how you remember the people that you lose and things like that. It's also 3 hours long. It's just a slow burn of a 3 hour long movie, and I absolutely loved it. Honestly, as soon as I got to New York this week, I did the work I needed to do, and I was like, I have no plans tonight. I'm gonna go see some movies. So I immediately booked a ticket for this and Licorice Pizza, and I just saw them one after another.
Nice.
I didn't really like Licorice Pizza that as much. Is the one getting all the hype right now. This movie, though, I think is incredible. So if you like good slow burn human dramas, it's beautiful. It's really meditative. I think it's worth watching. It's called Drive My Car. It's available in limited release right now, but it's probably going to be on video on demand within a month or so. That's it for the show. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find me online at Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com. And you can find Sherlyn at...
If you're going to be in Singapore and you're a Singaporean and you somehow think my work's fine, you can...
Don't invite this. What are you doing?
On Twitter, at Sherlyn Low.
Great. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts, including Spotify. We're out, folks. We'd like to take a second to thank our sponsor, Mouser Electronics. Not only does Mouser stock the world's widest selection of semiconductors and electronic components, they also offer an original content series called Empowering Innovation Together. EIT takes a deep dive into the hottest tech trends, and this month the focus is on industrial automation. Check out podcasts, articles, infographics, videos, and more at mouser.com/empowering-innovation.
Get out. You're banned. Very bad joke. I'm kidding.